All rise. The Honorable Chief Justice and Justices of the Supreme Court of Ohio. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment.
You may be seated.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case is 2021-719, Navistar Incorporated versus Dutch Made Logistics Incorporated for the appellant, Mr. Jakopczyk?
Jakopczyk, Your Honor.
How's that? Okay. Welcome.
Chief Justice O'Connor, and may it please the court. Kevin Jakopczyk on behalf of Navistar. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. The decision below would radically alter Ohio law and undermine decades of precedent that have provided Ohio businesses with the stability and predictability that comes with their fundamental right to have the terms of their written bargains enforced. As part of its purchase of the Navistar trucks at issue in this litigation, Dutch Made entered into written warranty agreements that outlined the obligations Navistar made and didn't make regarding those trucks. Those agreements are exceptionally clear that Navistar made no representations or warranties, express or implied, except those in writing in the party's agreement. Dutch Made read the warranty, understood the warranty, accepted the warranty, and for years sought and received the full benefit of the warranty. And Dutch Made's representative admitted that its fraud claim is inconsistent with the warranty terms. Because the warranty terms and its disclaimer contradict Dutch Made's fraud claim, that claim fails as a matter of law under the principles outlined by this court in Galmish and applied to bar similar claims in cases like Paragon Networks, JA Industries, D&H Autobath, Goodyear, and Keller. And Ohio law mandates that result for good reason. When courts enforce the written terms of parties' bargains, they force them to literally get on the same page regarding what is and is not promised and price their transactions accordingly. And they prevent the fate of multi-million dollar commercial transactions from turning on self-interested testimony regarding shifting memories of years-old oral conversations, as it did in this case. And those same policy principles animate the second additional rule of Ohio law that independently bars Dutch Made's claim. That's the additional damages rule that stems from the Textron case and has been adopted in courts throughout Ohio. Under that rule, Dutch Made's fraud claim also fails because they failed to identify any damages attributable to the alleged fraud that were separate and additional to the ones Dutch Made alleged stemmed from the breach of contract.
Does it make a difference in applying Galmish that the purchase was from a dealership and not directly from Navistar?
No, Your Honor. Throughout this transaction, as Dutch Made's claim makes clear, the negotiations occurred with the dealer and with Navistar. The warranty discussions were part of those negotiations, and there's no separate consideration for the limited warranty. It was part and parcel of the purchase itself. So it was part of the terms of the purchase, part of the price that was negotiated with Dutch Made, and Dutch Made, in its own complaint, alleged that it relied on the warranty itself when it was making its purchase.
Thank you.
And the rule in Galmish that fraud claims are barred when they're contradicted by the terms of the party's agreements is very easy to apply here. We reproduced the disclaimer in full on page 6 of our opening brief, and it's clear that that warranty was the only warranty given by Navistar, that it is in lieu of all other warranties expressed or implied. It specifically disclaimed the warranty for of merchantability, so fitness for ordinary purpose, and fitness for any particular purpose, and then disclaimed all other representations and obligations.
So what about the difference between a misrepresentation and a concealment?
Yes, Your Honor. So the concealment claim, or the non-disclosure claim in this case, was that with a duty, with an alleged duty to disclose, Navistar failed to disclose material information. The only basis to impose a duty to disclose and the only basis that was alleged and the basis that Dutch Made proceeded to trial on was that there were representations that were made that were not literally false, but that created a false impression that Navistar had a duty to correct. And so it is still, the claim, even though it's styled as non-disclosure, is still premised and depends upon allegations of affirmative representations. And the JA Industry case deals with a very similar situation in which there was allegations that a salesperson had made statements that created a duty to inform that the machine in that case would produce plastic of a certain quality, but the court analyzed the disclaimer of representations in that case and said that the alleged oral statements contradict that disclaimer of representations, and therefore the parole evidence bars the parole evidence rule would bar the evidence upon which that fraudulent inducement claim would depend. And then the other reason, I think, why it still makes sense to apply the parole evidence rule in the non-disclosure context is illustrated by the Paragon Networks case. And that's, even though it's styled as a non-disclosure claim, what it is attempting to do is enforce expectations regarding the quality of a product. So in Paragon Networks, that was a sale of software subject to a limited 90-day warranty with a disclaimer of implied warranties and other representations.
So what statements were made that would contradict the warranty?
So the warranty itself disclaims all representations and all other warranties expressed or implied. So the trial record, you know, frankly, is not specifically all that clear what Dutch Made is alleging is the exact partial representation, but the warranty itself disclaims all other representations and all other warranties, and so that's the contradiction.
But wasn't it just a general boilerplate kind of disclaimer? I mean, there were no discussions or negotiations on what would be included overall, right? So does this represent an understanding?
So I think there's certainly a requisite understanding. You know, Dutch Made did in its brief describe the warranty as boilerplate, and I don't think there's a dispute that it was pre-printed. I think we cited the Jones and Unibelt case where Ohio law says that just because a contract is pre-printed, that does not mean that it's not enforceable if the other party can read and understand it.
Sure. No, I don't mean to say, I know Jones said, I don't mean to say it has no validity. But when you say here, you're talking about express warranties or representations, and you're saying that there's a meeting of the minds where this standard form says everything. Everything means everything, right? So you're saying that is adequate enough for alleged fraudulent misrepresentation?
Dutch Made understood the warranty. Dutch Made's own representative testified that it was clear that it meant that Navistar was making no other promises other than what it was in writing. Dutch Made alleged that it relied on the warranty, and it alleges that it is a enforceable contract. There's no dispute that Dutch Made understood and agreed to the warranty. So I think there is the requisite understanding. And there's, I think, two very important policy points about why this rule makes sense. And the first is related to the integrity of contracts. We cited the East River, the United States Supreme Court's decision in our brief, where it discussed when manufacturers or sellers disclaim warranties or promises, the price of the transaction goes down. Conversely, when they make additional promises, the price goes up. The transactions are based on all of the terms in an agreement. And so when a plaintiff tries to circumvent the terms by claiming reliance on a promise or warranty that was not made, then it is trying to get a benefit that it did not bargain for.
Excuse me, and that might be true, but didn't the Court of Appeals say that the language in this contract standard agreement can't vitiate fraud? The Court of Appeals said you can't escape liability from deliberate misrepresentations under a standard contract.
I agree that the Court of Appeals in this case held that disclaimers are sort of categorically ineffective in the face of fraud claims. I think that is completely inconsistent with the Ohio law and the 12, I believe, cases that we cited in our opening brief where disclaimers in the parole evidence rule were applied to certain fraud claims. And there are fraud claims that are based on representations that would contradict or vary the unambiguous terms of the agreement.
Do we need to overrule Lucarell versus Nationwide to go with your argument? That there's a discrete pre-existing duty in tort, even if there's a contract? Case from 2018.
I think the issue in Lucarell was whether or not punitive damages available could be for a fraud claim. What was not considered was whether the parties there had agreed that there would be no other representations or warranties. And so I don't believe you would need to overrule the case. I think it considered a different issue. The key here is that Dutch Maid agreed and for years reaped the benefits of its agreement. That there were no other representations and warranties. Consistently getting repairs that Navistar, paid for.
Is it accurate that there were over 100 instances of repair needs over this couple years?
Some clarity on the record here, the evidence, from plaintiff's own expert was that the trucks are not like, for instance, these kinds of trucks are not like the kinds of cars that we're used to, and that vehicles and these kinds of trucks do need repair occasionally for up to 1, 2, 3 times a year. And so when you're talking about 20 trucks owned for 3 to 5 years, they kept two of the trucks all the way to 2018. I think that number is accurate, but I think that the record shows that the number of repairs is not actually so far out of bounds. Their profits went up every year the trucks were in the fleet. They never lost a customer because of their trucks. They exceeded the average national mileage. There's plenty of facts, in the record on that. But I think the key point here is that Dutch Maid agreed that there was no promise regarding the quality or the number of repairs. The only promise that the parties made was that Navistar would provide those repairs when they became necessary. And Navistar lived up to every word of that bargain.
Were the majority of the repairs having to do with the EGR cooler?
I don't believe the majority of the repairs on the vehicle of the vehicles on the whole had to do with the EGR cooler. There were EGR cooler repairs, and I think that goes to our point that there was no promise made that there would not be. The warranty agreement is clear that the only agreement that was made was to provide repairs when they are necessary.
So the representation, I guess, maybe by the representative that particular problem had been fixed is no avail.
The plaintiff's representative certainly testified that someone had said that. The jury did reject the affirmative misrepresentation claim, but the point is that when it came to finalize the party's agreement into a written contract, they agreed that there were no other representations or warranties that were part of the transaction. And therefore, when the transaction was priced, Dutch Maid entered into an agreement without that guarantee. Dutch Maid could have asked and insisted for a warranty that there would be no EGR cooler repairs. It did not do that. Instead, it agreed to a transaction in which it disclaimed all the representations and warranties.
But what about the omission of the statement that essentially they launched it before they were ready to go, that the testing wasn't done, and that they had no choice to launch, but to launch in 2010. I mean, that's not addressed anywhere in the warranty, is it?
Well, I think it is for two points. One is the one I originally made, that to have a duty to disclose, there still has to be an affirmative representation that would trigger it, and the representations were disclaimed. And second, that representation only makes sense in sort of in the context of what it means is that there was some assurance regarding the quality of the vehicle, right? This wasn't a transaction where they purchased testing services. They were purchasing a vehicle. So any representation, our issue related to the testing is still attempting to enforce these expectations regarding quality, which were specifically disclaimed on the agreement. And the Paragon Networks case is directly on point there in the allegedly non-disclosed Y2K defect in the software, where the court held that allowing an omission claim based on that would essentially imply a warranty that defect didn't exist, and that would contradict the terms of the party's written agreement.
And these were new trucks, not used, right?
That is correct. If there are no further questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Okay, you have 15 seconds, just so you know.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel.
May it please the court. Good morning, Chief Justice. Good morning, Your Honors. Mark Kittrick here. I want to talk about what this case is about, which you've hit on, and that is the appellants want to legalize line via a limited warranty. We didn't hear one time in the last 20 minutes this whole case stems on fraud by non-disclosure. Purposeful concealment that a non-runaway jury in Newark, Ohio found. They had three claims to judge. This was not a runaway jury that we sometimes see or hear about. They rejected misrepresentation. They rejected a breach of contract. They found there was fraud by non-concealment. And that is critical because that is a discerning and different tort that bore literally this limited warranty. Navistar never would have bought these trucks if they had been told the truth. They concealed it any way they could. Specifically, this was a Max 1, Max 2 situation. They had Max 1s, they knew there was a problem. To answer your question, Chief Justice, yes, of over 100 repairs, the vast majority of them were EGR valve problems. That was purposely withheld by the appellants throughout numerous conversations that our clients had, coming back to them and saying, what's going on here? And it wasn't misrepresentations. We know that we try to keep misrepresentations allowed to be disclaimed by warranties so we can have an integrated contract. This is different because this is fraud by not telling, by lying, covering up. That's what this jury found after listening to the evidence, listening to the experts, listening to the representatives of each company. Once that happened, they felt, wait a minute, what's going on here? We're not being told that these trucks have numerous problems. They purposely withheld information on the valve having numerous problems, that they didn't have the test time on the road like they claim. These trucks are supposed to run about 1,000,000 miles. They were having problems after 100,000 miles. They were losing value. So when we go to your point, Your Honor, about the warranty, this is not, it kind of brings me back to the St. X days and our law school days where we had to take Latin. It brings me back to the justum generis interpretation of statutes and contracts. If you're going to have a general statement and you start delineating specifics like they do here in this warranty, then everything's interpreted by like kind. There's not one single reference in this warranty for non-disclosures or reliance. Remember, as it's well said in the Textron case by the judge, warranties involve reliance, which is really critical because reliance is what were you told or what were you not told. It's one thing to disclaim misrepresentations. It's another to somehow know you should disclaim things you never told about to make a decision to begin with. These were material points purposely withheld, which caused them to buy the contract. So we have the beginning of this. None of the parole evidence issues here. We don't have fraud where people are trying to say there's fraud when there's a contract. We have fraud happening, which then created an express contract that was based on
the fraud was what, the statements?
The fraud was the lack of the statements, Your Honor, and that is the key. This is not, the jury actually rejected misrepresentations. They found fraud by non-disclosure, and that's a critical distinction because we don't want to lump misrepresentations and non-disclosures in one bag. They're recognized differences of claims. One's a tort, one could be a potential contract breach. What's important here is we actually have it recognized by law that these are different claims. In essence, if we think about any of these things, think about how we define negligence or releases that we all see in cases. And it's akin to a release in a way. We start putting in words, we better put in all the right words. We have acts or omissions. We have releases that get into acts or omissions. We're not afraid to put in things that should be included if we're going to disclaim something. But we don't want to sanction, this court does not want to sanction corporations trying to claim through a limited warranty.
I don't understand. If we adopt your view, what is the point of a warranty? Will you disclaim warranties of merchantability and fitness for a purpose, all other representations?
That's true.
I mean,
warranty is very important.
Do you think the Court of Appeals got it right that just because this was some kind of boilerplate, it wasn't important?
Yeah, I think the Court of Appeals did get it right, Your Honor, and I'll talk to your point. We want warranties, absolutely. We want to say, okay, here's what we're promising and what we're not promising. That's different than a non-disclosure situation. For example, in warranties that are upheld by this court and others, it's usually language that says full and fair warning that have everything in it. This is a boilerplate disclaimer. It did not include reliance. It only included liability. It did not disclaim the failures to disclose material information, and it was just to fix trucks that break down, which they did, and the jury found that. So this was, Goodyear wanted a full and fair warning. This case did not have it. So if we're going to have warranties that are going to be upheld, Your Honor, as you say, then they better have everything in it so that non-disclosure is included. Now,
Counsel,
that's a public policy.
What gave rise to the obligation to disclose here? Because there's a million things that a seller of a vehicle like this could or could not disclose. So what gave rise to the obligation to disclose, and what was it that they should have disclosed?
That's a great question, Your Honor, and it's very specifically brought out in the trial. This company, our client, had problems with these trucks, the Mack 1. So they were worried about this valve, which supposedly takes the exhaust, sticks it back in, and so it creates a problem in the exhaust system. So they specifically said, hey, we bought some of these trucks, there was problems, Mack 1. The company, the appellant says, we got Mack 2. Now, that's a lot better. We've already tested it. We've got this, we've got that, we've done it. So our
But that's not non-disclosure. That's representations that you're talking
about.
Well,
then they went, to answer that point, Your Honor, then they went to the company, the appellant, and said, what are you doing about this Mack 2 problem and the valve problem? They specifically addressed it numerous times.
Okay, again, you're talking about representations. You say they went and said, what are you doing? The response is a representation, which the warranty clearly disclaims any representations.
That's when they went and asked the questions. I'm not talking about misrepresentations. The appellant here specifically did not disclose the problems they were having. It wasn't a question of what they said or lied.
It seems like you're kind of trying to slice a very thin apple there. I mean, when you say they went to them and they ask and they didn't tell them something, but that to me is a representation. I mean,
well, I disagree, Your Honor. I think if we've got the law supports non-disclosures or representation for misrepresentation.
So if someone says to you, are there any problems? And you say, no, there's no problems, that's a representation.
No, they didn't just say there's no problems. They didn't tell them about any of the facts that they were having problems with this valve or all the facts. They literally didn't tell them anything. They concealed it. And that's where the jury found there wasn't misrepresentations, but there was non-disclosures. How many times in real life have we told people after we hear a story, said, you know, I really wish you would have told me that. That was important for me to know, and when I made a decision or making a judgment call on what happened here. So you're right, it's a fine slice, but it's definitely delineated in the law because we have separate claims that the jury looked at here. We have separate laws for non-disclosure and fraud. This is fraud by the inducement. That's separate from misrepresentations.
Why isn't this just a contract claim? You know, someone buys a truck, the truck didn't perform the way it was supposed to. That sounds to me like a contract.
Because this case, this contract was born out of the fraud and the inducement to begin with. So we don't want to merge the contract in the fraud.
But we have the rule about fraud in the inducement when it's within the scope of the written contract. Listen, you can't have a claim. That's Textron, right?
Yeah, but this is not Textron. Textron was a plenary discussion. They were negotiated. It wasn't boilerplate as it was here.
Well, wait a second. wasn't boilerplate, where has that ever been a factor between two commercial parties?
Many times. I mean,
when you have two sophisticated commercial parties, when has one ever been able to say, well, we didn't, this is boilerplate, we didn't actually read it, our attorneys didn't matter?
Well, I didn't say they didn't read it. This was made by the appellant. This was their warranty they disclosed.
Right, and
they signed it. So, but it didn't include. If they're going to make it, then they better make it good. And they didn't. They didn't say all reliances. For example, let's not forget the distinction between reliances. There's no discussion in that warranty saying any and all reliances we disclaim. There's not one word of reliance in that express warranty. Four times on damages, but not once on reliance. And that's important. Now, if they had said any reliances are disclaimed, ever made, that's a different story. We wouldn't be here potentially.
So, Mr. Kittrick,
yes.
The first purchase of the Max Force 1 trucks were in 2008 and 2009, correct?
Correct.
And then after 100,000 miles, the trucks began to have problems?
Correct.
So then the Max 2 trucks were released onto the market, or at least for sale in 2010?
Correct.
And 2010 and 2011 was the purchase of the Max 2 trucks. So the question of the testing and whether the Max 2 had been adequately tested, like basically stress tested, do you think that that is something that made a difference to your client, if they would have known that they weren't tested to the point where they could be released?
The answer is yes. In the court case, the trial jury heard, Your Honor, everybody heard that had they known this, had this been disclosed and not held back or concealed, they would not have bought these trucks. It's done. This deal wouldn't have happened. So it's one thing to say, we'll fix your trucks. It's another to basically mislead by inducement and have you make the deal to begin with. And that was the key. And that's what happened here, and that's what the jury found. We can't let corporations reap the benefits of deception that lead to purchases and paying nothing, which is what they want to do, when this kind of fraudulent conduct, which is found by a jury, occurs. That is the worst public policy that this state of Ohio would want. We want to have good contracts. We want to have businesses do business here and spend money. But we sure as heck don't want to sanction conduct that say, okay, if you write it, we're just going to let a limited warranty boilerplate that's not fully negotiated.
But your client could have negotiated for whatever kind of warranty they wanted, right? They'd have to buy trucks from them. They could have negotiated the warranty. They could have said, if this is the warranty, we're not buying it.
If you want to get into whether or not you can make that decision, that's an informed decision. If you've got the knowledge to make it, that's true. But if you don't have the knowledge or have been misled by concealment, how can you actually make a really informed decision at that point on a material decision-making situation? That's the problem, Your Honor, is if you don't tell somebody the truth about it and you lie about it, how can you say that that's a good informed decision when you sign something? That's the problem we have here, and the jury found that to be the case.
So you had a warranty that the warranty covered repairs. It didn't cover time for, you know, your losses for not having the vehicles. If you wanted to negotiate for that, you could have negotiated for that. You would have had to pay more, I'm sure. But you didn't negotiate that for that. So why should the court change the bargain that you made into something else?
Well, the jury, first of all, didn't find there was a breach of a misrepresentation here, a breach of warranty. The jury agrees in that sense that they didn't say that the warranty was breached. They found, wait a minute, the whole warranty occurred because of the fraud and the inducement to begin with. And we just have to remember that we can't mix the two. This court has continuously upheld special tort separate actions compared to contract actions. The jury didn't find there was a breach of contract here. They did try to fix these trucks numerous times that were back more than they should have been, but they found, wait a minute, they were lied to, not by misrepresentations, Your Honor, but by omissions, fraud by non-disclosure, which was enough to cause our client to buy these trucks when they wouldn't have bought it. To answer your question, Your Honor, they wouldn't have bought these trucks and wouldn't have made this deal to begin with.
So, counsel, what you're saying, the warranty is irrelevant at this point. It doesn't matter. The way this warranty is written, it has it's irrelevant to the fraud that preceded the execution of the contract with this warranty in it. So focusing on the warranty is really misfocusing.
That's what I thought of when I was coming over here this morning, Your Honor, that we keep talking about warranties, but really we can't forget this all started with the fraud, and that's where this is. I'm certainly open to any other questions the court has. In conclusion, I would say the appellants want to reap the benefits of deception here that led to the purchase of these trucks and paying nothing when there's just a solo damage award, which was lost profits and diminution of value from our jury. It's an unreasonable, unfair, frankly, unconscionable result. We want to deter fraud. We want to discourage it. We want to uphold proper contracts that have been engaged in. This court has the power to stop such conduct, and we ask that you enforce the lower court's ruling and uphold the jury's finding from 3 years ago. Thank you very much, Your Honors.
Thank you. Counsel, you've used your time. I'll give you a minute.
Thank you, Your Honor. I think counsel made an important concession that a representation claim would be barred by the language of the warranty. And if you look at our Supplement 84, paragraph 103 of their complaint in their allegations about fraud by nondisclosure, it says, having made representations that created misleading impressions about the trucks, Navistar had a duty to disclose material information about the trucks that would dispel those impressions. So by their own allegations, by the jury instructions, the instruction on duty to disclose on page 107 of our supplement, their fraudulent nondisclosure claim depends upon representations, and counsel conceded that those representations had been disclaimed. To your question, Chief Justice, about the timing of the negotiations and warranties. In Galmish, if you look, the entire point of the parole evidence rule is to exclude evidence of prior statements and prior negotiations. And that makes sense because fraud occurs, as counsel said, at the moment of reliance. And the moment of reliance is the moment of purchase. And at that moment, they alleged and did, in fact, agree to the warranty terms. So the alleged reliance occurred at the exact same moment as they agreed to the warranty. To the questions regarding a boilerplate contract, on Supplement 166, their representative admitted, when you buy a truck, you know that this, the warranty agreement, is the deal. This is the agreement. There's no question in the case there was an agreement between the parties. There's no question in the case about what the terms were. There's no question that, as they said, Navistar honored every word that was written down in the agreement. The question for you is whether Dutch Made has to do the same and honor their commitment that there was no other representations or warranties. Ohio law says that they do. We ask you to reaffirm those principles and reverse the judgment below.
Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll take the matter under advisement. You'll be notified of our decision.